Okay, now that's better. Good morning. Happy Sunday. Thank you very much for coming here and welcome to the Kadamba Center. Yeshua is, maybe he's on his way back from the retreat, or maybe just tying up ends at the retreat in the mountains of North Carolina. So they've asked me to try to lead a session in his absence. My name's Lama. This is Venerable Cherokee. And usually what we do is we start by doing some three prostrations. And if you are new to the center, you've never been before, or you're new to Buddhism, you can just remain standing, and you don't have to prostrate. I know when I first came, I was very uncomfortable about prostrating. And we're just prostrating to all the holy images, that are in this room, to the Dharma texts, the Dharma teachings. And so very, very blessed to be able to do that, because there's incredible merit in being able to prostrate and also to circumambulate the stupa, turn the prayer wheels, and so forth. Great purification, practice, and accumulation of merit. So if you like, let's do that together. Okay, so if you'll turn to the white prayer book, very easy. There's only one prayer book. It's at the end of the pew. If you're sitting at the pew, toward the aisle, there's some at the pocket, burgundy pocket. Okay. And if you'll turn to the first base sheet, where it says Kadamba Center Prayers, so we'll chant Shakyamuni Buddha's mantra three times. Then the four immeasurables in English, and then in Tibetan. Taya ta mune mune maha munaye soha. Taya ta mune mune. Maha munaye soha. Taya ta mune mune. Maha munaye soha. May all sentient beings have happiness and the causes of happiness. May all sentient beings be free from suffering and the cause of suffering. May all sentient beings be inseparable from the happiness that is free from suffering. May all sentient beings abide in equanimity, free from attachment for friends and hatred for enemies. Sentientam chedevadam te. Deva you please turn the page, the first pink page. At the bottom, you'll see two mantras. So let's chant Chen Rei Six mantra 8 times, and then right above that, Green Taurus mantra 7 times. Om Mani Padme Hum. 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 Om Tare Tu Tare Tu Re Soha. 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 Okay, now the children are welcome to go to their classes. Thank you. So, Geshe-la usually starts by doing some type of meditation, and he recommends that we do the 9-round breathing meditation before we do the other meditation practices. So the purpose of the 9-round breathing is to get rid of the imbalanced energy that's stuck in our channels. My understanding is that we have 72,000 channels, and this is where our subtle energy flows around. And so when we our energy and our mind ride together, they're always together, it's called the energy of the mind. And if you don't concentrate, then your mind becomes imbalanced. Your mind is full of stories, so you can't concentrate. So it's like many small creeks that are very weak, but when they are channeled into one, it becomes very powerful. And so we make our minds powerful through concentration, by bringing our attention on one meditation object. So when we when our mind is balanced, it becomes flexible, and then we can turn it to a positive thing, so into a Dharma practice. So, and the way we do that is by concentrating on our meditation object. So in this practice, it'll be on our breath. So the way we do this, the 9-round breathing, there's 3 different rounds. First round, we take our left hand and put our a middle finger on our ring finger, and then we block our left nostril, and then we inhale through our right nostril, and then still with our using the same hand, then we block our right nostril and exhale through our left, and we do that 3 times. So that's rounds 1 through 3, and then for rounds 4 through 6, we take our right hand, put our middle finger on our ring finger, on top of our ring finger, and then we block the opposite nose. So we would block our right nostril, inhale through our left, and then take the same hand and block our right our left nostril and exhale through our right nostril. And then, so that's rounds 4 through 6. And then for 7 through 9, we inhale through both nostrils, exhale through our both nostrils. So, and then we don't do it forcefully, we just do it deeply, slowly. So, so let's start with that. So we take our left hand, and then we inhale. Okay, and then we can repeat that if your, you know, mind still feels sort of imbalanced. Now the other one is the 21 counting breaths meditation, and you can count your breaths. What we do is we start with an exhalation, and then we breathe in, inhale, and count one. Exhale, breathe in, inhale, count two. Until we reach a certain number. And so today we'll do 21, but you at home, if you like to do this, you can do it just 7 times, 14 times, 21 times, 108 times, whatever, you know, your preferences. And I forgot to mention that the meditation posture. So if you're just a beginner, just the most important thing is to try to keep your back straight. But if you are more serious, there's a 7-point meditation posture. And so we start with our legs. If you're sitting in a chair like I am, you try to have your feet flat on the floor. And if that's uncomfortable, you can put your feet on a cushion. And if you're seated on a cushion, then you just cross your legs. And have your hips higher than your knees. So that's a very stable posture, and it actually helps you to maintain your posture much longer. And your arms are away from your torso so that you can have a little air coming through on each side. And your hands can be right on left or on your knees, whichever is comfortable. When we have there's one mudra where you have your hands right on left with thumbs touching. You can do it like this. And your shoulders are level. Your head is, the top of your head is sort of slightly forward, but not so that your chest is resting, your chin is resting on your chest, not like that. And, you know, when I say shoulders are level, it means, you know, don't try to sway like this or go like this and sit. Try to be, you know, straight. Or back and forth also, you know, try to be straight up and down. And then, let's see, your next is your jaw and your tongue and your lips and so forth. So your tongue would be on the top of your palate behind your front teeth. And your eyes are, it's recommended that your eyes are sort of slightly, slightly open, unfocused, but for many people it's very difficult to start that way, so they might keep them lightly closed rather than having, you know, looking around the room or whatever. And then we would focus on our breath. If you have thoughts that arise, whether good or bad, you hear movements, sounds, and so forth, you just label it. And also, you know, if projects suddenly come up, you think of something that you don't want to forget, you just, you know, label it as a thought, label it as a sound, a movement, whatever, phone ringing, and then bring your focus back to your breath. So let's start that. And also, as you're counting your in-breaths, start with an exhalation and then inhale one. If you lose count, then just go back to number one and start over again. But just keep it very light. You know, don't feel bad if you couldn't continue your concentration on the numbers. It doesn't matter. Okay, so I'll sound the bell once to begin and once to end. So the aim of this practice is to try to have to breathe normally, you know, not deeply, or so that you even notice, you know, your breath going in and out that much, you know, not forcefully, but just to notice the air going in lightly, in and out. So many of us come to the center for different reasons. I don't know why each of you have done so. Some people are just curious and they come, or some people have already have started practice, have come from other centers. Other people may want to join a spiritual community, make friends and so forth for social well-being, and that's perfectly fine. And then others may have come to the center or wanted to look into Buddhism because they are looking for peace of mind, an end to unhappiness in their life, some lasting happiness. And so today I'd like to talk about Dharma for a Happy Life, which is sort of like the subject, the general topic for this whole series. But I thought that was a really good title. I couldn't think of another one for what I'm going to say today. So, any practice that gives you courage during difficult times, peace of mind, is true Dharma practice. It doesn't have to be, you know, Buddhist teachings. It's what really helps you in your present situation at the present time of whatever you are in. So But in this case, I'm going to try to say things from the Buddhist point of view. So the past has already gone. The future hasn't come yet. So right now, all we really have control over, what we really have to work with, is the present moment. With the present moment, we can bring up regret for maybe some unskillful actions that we've done in our past, purify them, and so we take care of the past. And at the present moment, we can do things by being mindful, being aware of what we're doing, how we're doing, why we're doing it, and so we take care of our future. It's sort of like a type of, being proactive or effective, as they say, in mundane life. So, but then sometimes, often we are overwhelmed with mundane activities. We have our jobs, we have to chase after our children, we have maybe a boss, we have customers that we have to take care of, maybe we have bills that we're overwhelmed with, so it's a difficult life. So I remember many times that all I could do was go around stamping out fires and not really, being able to follow my regular schedule. It was just that, one after the other, whether it was at work or at home, at both. And, but even then, from the Buddhist point of view, this life that we have is very precious, meaningful, difficult to find. Even if we suddenly looked out and there was a sky full of jewels, gold, silver, diamonds, glitter falling gently from the sky and the clouds, and we all got, more than we needed, even then, this precious human life is worth more than all that. Because with a wish-fulfilling jewel or Aladdin's lamp, there's no way that we can tell what's going to happen in our reborn. We can't control how we're going to be reborn in our next life. So, that's really hard. Sometimes it's very hard to understand that. So to understand that, we have to, sort of step back and broaden our view. Because we've been born, or we have this, the opportunity of benefiting from the eight states where there is no opportunity to practice Dharma. So the eight states, if you're born as a hell being, you're completely overwhelmed by suffering. That's all you can think about, how hot or how cold or, whatever it is. And, maybe you don't believe in hell realms, but certainly I'm sure you have seen people who are overwhelmed with tremendous suffering, and perhaps you have had that happen to you also. But in the hell realm, it's unrelenting, day and night for eons. So there's no possible opportunity to even think of anything but pain. If you're born in the Preta realm as a hungry ghost, then you're overwhelmed by hunger and thirst and the search for food and drink. So that's all you can think of. For a hungry ghost, according to the teachings, they can look at a body of water like a river or a lake and it just dries up. It's something really beyond our conception. And then there's animals. Many animals appear to be very intelligent, very emotional. I've even seen things where they show a little shame for doing something wrong. But even then, there's no way that they can really understand the situation that they're in, and there's no way they can learn how to read or understand the teachings. Even though if you're born as a well-trained dog or whatever, parrot, gorilla, it's still beyond their abilities. Now, if you're born in the Deva realm or the God realm, you know, they live a very, very long life. You know, it's just beyond our imagination. But they are so absorbed in their bliss that they just don't have any desire or any kind of interest in liberation from samsara. I think this is great, you know, but unfortunately, even though they do have a long life, eventually it does end, and then unfortunately, I think within a few days before they die, they suddenly realize that they're dying. And by then it's pretty late to start a great Dharma practice. So they fall to the lower realms. So even as, you know, God, and you can see this, you know, in daily life too. You see people who are extremely rich and, have one pleasure after another. Friends, you know, houses, cars, you know, clothing, whatever, but still, you know, they don't practice Dharma, and eventually, you know, their good karma, they burn that off, they use it up, and then they could lose everything, or they can develop tremendous fear and anxiety about losing what they have, have untrust, you know, and friends can turn against them. They lose everything, even in this life. So even the gods of this life famous people and so forth, it's a difficult life for them, not a good life. And then there, of course, there are people who live in remote or barbarous lands where the Dharma practice does not exist, and there are no Dharma practitioners to, you know, help you or to share in your beliefs. That happens. It happens now. I know of many people like that in certain countries. And also there are people, humans, who have, they are severely deficient, have severe disabilities, mental difficulties, faculties, severe retardation. And when we say this, we mean that, say, you're trying to teach them every day for a year how to say something very simple, you know, like a mantra, and they have no hope of learning even one syllable, that type of thing, that type of a deficiency is what we're talking about in this case. And then there are people who have access to the Dharma, who can, you know, they live in an area where the Dharma has come, but they have wrong view, or they have views opposite to the Buddhist view. I know, for example, I was living in Japan, you know, land of many, many temples, many, many Buddhist statues, you know, Zen Buddhism everywhere, you know, you turn in, steeped in the culture and so forth. But I was Catholic. So whenever there was a temple or anything, it was just like a cultural thing. Oh, isn't this beautiful? You know, I'll ring the bell, but nothing. Absolutely nothing. And now that I'm in North Carolina, I became a Buddhist, so I had no opportunity, even though it was there, you know, everywhere, people ready to give it to you. I didn't want it. So here we are, we're living in a region where the Buddhist teachings are pure, complete. We have qualified teachers, like Yeshua on the Super Rinpoche, His Holiness, you know, either coming to our world, through they're available. We have a Dharma Center, Dharma practitioners, we have benefactors who support us. So, you know, how wonderful is that? You know, how precious, how meaningful, how, you know, difficult to find, you know? So that's how, what we mean. Even when, you know, there's a lot of suffering now. You know, you may be in the bottom of the well of depression or divorce, you know, terrible suffering from, you know, like disease, cancer, so forth. Still, life is precious, meaningful, you know, difficult to find, wonderful, amazing. So, And not only that, not only are they available, but we need to use our knowledge, our brain, to study the practice and put them in, put the practice, the teachings, into our daily lives, you know, every moment, being aware of this. Now, we have been, reborn as a human being, and, according to the scriptures, to the Buddha, the cause for that was to have a previous life of pure ethics. Now, you know how difficult it is to keep vows, to keep promises and things like that. So you did this. We all did this. And that's why we have this human life. So you have to, even if you don't care about other people in the whole world, you have to, you can't let yourself down. You know, you did all this work, so keep the momentum going. You know, do this even for yourself. You know, you need to do that. So don't let yourself down. You know. So the next thing that I'd like to talk about is impermanence. You know, as they say, life is like a flash of lightning, like bubbles on water, like dew on grass in the morning. It just disappears. And we never know when that's going to happen. I know it's difficult to, think about impermanence, things changing, especially about death. It's sort of like a topic that's taboo in our culture. But, this we know back in the, in our minds, that this life will end. We know our positions certainly fall apart. We know our children grow, and we change, we get old, and our environment changes, and so forth. So so the purpose is not to, make us feel hopeless or to feel depressed about dying. It's because we have this awareness of the imminence of death, that it could happen at any moment, then we don't procrastinate. Then we know that we have to start working on our practice right now, because we don't know when it's going to end. We don't know when the opportunity for being able to study and practice will end. For example, we might be forced to move because of employment or whatever to a barbarous land, a land where there's no practitioners, there's no temples, no teachings. So even if we don't die, this opportunity can just go away. So the way to practice is that if we know that an enemy is coming, and we know that it's coming soon, then we do things to get ready for that enemy. We get our defenses up, we collect our weapons, we practice, how we're going to poke people or whatever. Keep them from, keeping away from us, building fires and things like that, a moat. So that's what we do. That's exactly the kind of mentality we should have in preparing for our imminent death. So in the Lam Rim Chenmo, the great stages of the path to enlightenment, there is a contemplation about death, a contemplation that death is certain, the contemplation that the time of death is uncertain, the contemplation that the time of death, nothing helps except spiritual practice. So in the contemplation that death is certain, there's 3 points. Contemplation that the Lord of Death definitely will come and cannot be avoided. So in this Tibetan Dhammapada, they call it the collection of indicative verses. It says, somewhere to live that is unharmed by death, such a place does not exist. It does not exist in space. It does not exist in the sea, nor if you stay in the midst of mountains. So I think sometimes Vyashla says, you can go in the deepest ocean, the most desolate mountain top, or you can go to outer space and still, we're still have the karma to pass away. And then the contemplation that our life cannot be extended, but constantly diminishes. So, there's a life, continues to day and night to diminish, without break. There's sand is always coming down the little sand clock, whatever you call it. You know, without whether we think about it or not, it's always, you know, deteriorating.
Yeah.
So that's that contemplation, and the contemplation of the certainty of death, such that even while we're alive, there's little time for practice. So that's easy, you know. We spend so much of our life doing things, mundane things that we have to do, or we don't have to do, distractions. You know, we have to eat, sleep, we have to prepare our food, you know, have clothing, we have to drive to places and so forth. So there's times, you know, mundane activities that we have to do, and so there's very little time for spiritual practice, is what Lama Tsongkhapa is saying. And then this contemplation that the time of death is uncertain. So, there's 3 points. Contemplation that the lifespan in this world is uncertain. So there's two things. One is that it doesn't, you know, you could be just a baby, just, you know, newly born, or you can be, you know, a youth, or you can be middle-aged, you can be old. You know, at any point in time, our life could end. And it doesn't have anything to do with race, nationality, culture, gender, you know, your financial situation, employment, whatever it is. It's the same for all of each and one of us. You know, when it's time to die, when the karma ripens for us to die, nothing can stop that, not even the Buddha. We have to, there's no way to stop it. And then, so that ends the certainty of it. Oh, no, there's one more. And then a certainty that's the last one for that contemplation. Then the contemplation that that the causes of death are many and the causes of life few. So when you think about the causes of death, you know, there's quite a few, just very many, very, very many. But even the causes of life can be the cause of death. For example, if you eat nutritious foods at the wrong time, or you take medicine to help you, especially something like pain medication, often sometimes can cause, have very bad side effects. You know, like cancer, for instance. I know of one person who had that problem. And that's very easy to understand. And then it's the contemplation that, you know, our bodies are very weak, you know, that very fragile. So, you know, we aren't born with armor around our bodies. We are very delicate, very easy to, you know, to injure. And even something that you think that doesn't injure us or doesn't hurt us, like a thorn prick, can be the cause of death. So our bodies are very, very fragile. And then it's time of death. Nothing helps except spiritual practice. So our bodies obviously can't help us. Our resources, no matter how rich we are, there's no way that we can, you know, prevent death. And then our friends can't help. We can't take our friends with us. You know, we can't take anything with us when we pass away. They say that whether you're a king that has all his kingdom, a king would have to leave his kingdom behind at death, just as a beggar would leave behind his stick. It's the same thing. We're all the same. So it's very, very important to have this awareness of impermanence and death, so that we will not procrastinate and we will inspire us to practice. It should be an inspiration, you know, to think. And so when we do that, it really makes a huge difference. We really, you know, don't go through life forgetting to practice. It becomes extremely aware. For example, you know, the Christmas Carol, we see Scrooge forgetting, you know, having that time where he came back and then he realized he was still alive and that sort of thing, that kind of, you know, inspiration, You know, he knew eventually it was going to happen, that he would die, but then he had this chance, you know, that he would be able to have more Christmases and be able to benefit other people. And so that's sort of like the kind of mindset. And then the other one is that about the way we view cyclic existence, our samsara, our existence here. So, you know, we have this way of thinking that has been ingrained in us, you know, through many, many generations, not just us, but animals and insects, this survival, this instinct for survival. You know, everyone has this. And it's because, of course, we have, you know, injuries, disease, natural disasters, enemy attack, whatever. That's you know, has been happening to us for centuries. And it's just recently that we've, well, even now, today, we just have that threat still is here, that an enemy or whatever could do away with the country or city or whatever. With terrorist attacks, you know, it's evident there, too. But the problem, you know, that, of course, is there. But the problem is that we think of this existence, this samsaric life, as being, you know, something beautiful, paradise, we put all our, so what we do is put our energy and hopes into this life, and we don't think about future lives is the problem. So Geshe-la has said recently that samsara is an imperfect world, and all the beings in it are also imperfect, so of course we're going to have problems. You have to expect problems. And things may be going well, you know, for a while, but then things might get better or things might get worse. So, you know, these are the vicissitudes of life. So thinking of samsara and thinking about our contemplation of death, we can, you know, realize that these things happen because we are, we create the karma to be here. So the Buddhas and the Bodhisattvas, they are the same. They began like us, just like us, but they were able to emerge from samsaric life. What they did was they found a teacher, they studied and learned the teachings, they practiced them until they achieved freedom from samsaric life. So there's suffering, and then there's certain causes, conditions that create our suffering, that are the reason why we have suffering. And then there's happiness, and happiness also has its own set of causes and conditions. So happiness doesn't arise out of outside forces like, from like reward from a divine creator. And suffering doesn't come because of punishment, you know, that has happened, like, by someone else. It happens because we created the karma to have happiness and suffering. We had the created karma to create these causes and conditions. So in the teachings, when you do virtuous things, happiness arises. When you do non-virtuous things, it creates the cause and conditions for suffering. So this is an explanation of the certainty of karma. So when you think about karma in general, the Lama Rim says karma, there's a certainty of karma, the magnification of karma, not experiencing the effects of actions that you did not do, and the actions that you have done do not perish. So as far as the magnification of karma, in the collection of indicative verses, the Tibetan Dhammapada, it says, "Do not think that the commission of even a tiny sin will not pursue you. Just as a large vessel is filled by falling drops of water, so too is a fool filled up with sins, accumulated a little at a time. Do not think that the cultivation of even a tiny virtue will not pursue you. Just as a large pot is filled by falling drops of water, so too are the steadfast filled up by virtues accumulated a little at a time. So Shakyamuni Buddha was very skillful. You know, there are a lot of non-virtuous things that we can do, but he narrowed it down to 10 non-virtuous actions, 3 of body, 4 of speech, and 3 of mind. So 3 of body are killing, stealing, and for you it would be sexual misconduct. That's it. Thank you. And then for defensive speech, and lying. And then for mind, ill will, coveting, and wrong view. So what we do, we try to avoid those in our daily lives. And then we try to practice the virtuous actions, which are the opposite of those. So, and then instead of avoiding killing, we could practice saving lives, like animal liberation, for example. You know, you might think, oh, this, you know, mosquito is bothering me, but I will, you know, I'm not going to kill it. I'm going to just move away or whatever and not kill it. So that's a virtuous action. And instead of stealing, you could practice generosity and so forth. So this is the practice of virtue and not practicing non-virtue. So if you do, you know, an unskillful action, and that happens because we're ordinary beings. The definition of ordinary being, according to His Holiness, is someone who makes mistakes. So of course we'll make mistakes. So when that happens, then there are 6 antidotes according to the Lamrim. There's reciting the profound sutras. Lama Zopa Rinpoche certainly encourages us to recite the Golden Light Sutra, because that also helps against natural disasters and also to bring peace in the world. And there's also Sangata Sutra, Heart Sutra, Prajnaparamita Sutra. There's all sorts of sutras that are available. And so that's recitation of the profound sutras. There's meditation on emptiness. There's dependence on mantra. And in this case, he means the Vajrasattva mantra, which is a purification mantra. It's a 100-syllable mantra, or you can just say Om Vajrasattva Hum. Dependence on worship, making holy objects, that's next. That's like making these little stupas, making tsatsas, or even a line drawing of a Buddha is a tremendous purification practice. And dependence on worship is making offerings, like water bowl offerings. That's a big, great purification practice. And dependence on names, and that's a practice of the confessions to the 35 Buddhas, the 4 Dhyana families. Used to be a Tonka right there. I think they'll bring it back. They also have books available. I think the FPMT sells them. So also that. And then it's not in here, but Geshe-la says it's not in the Lamrim Chenpo. I guess because not everyone has a stupa available. But, you know, circumambulating the stupa, especially this one, has great millions of Dharmakaya relics, which are primary relics, relics that are like the robes of Shakyamuni Buddha, or, you know, the little pearl relics of his bones. Those are secondary relics, so this is tremendous purification that we have available to us. So that's what we do. Those are the antidotes if we do some unskillful actions. And so if you, you know, feel inclined, maybe, you know, there's certainly you can combine your other practices of religion with Buddhism. You know, Buddhism is extremely compatible with a way of thinking, mind training, a philosophy also. So if you want to stick to the religion of your family, your culture, whatever, that's Christianity, Islam, Hinduism, whatever, His Holiness certainly encourages that. But if you feel inclined to, you know, join Buddhism, there's the opportunity of taking refuge in the Three Jewels. And Geshe-la offers that practice, opportunity to those who are new to Buddhism to enter. It's the way to enter the Buddhist path. But then when you do that, you give up your, you know, reliance on others. For example, the divine creator and so forth. Because this time you're going to rely on the Buddha, the Dhamma, and the Sangha, three jewels. So, in that case, you would. So, the Buddha is, likened to a great teacher or a doctor, a physician, who knows exactly what medicine for you to take for your particular situation. The medicine is the Dharma, with the teachings of the Buddha, and the Arya Sangha are the what we call nurses that help with our practice, and Arya Sangha are lay people, ordained people who have realized emptiness. So those are the three jewels. And there are two causes for taking refuge effectively. One is the fear of the terror of the suffering of the lower realms and of the general suffering of samsara, and the faith of conviction that the three jewels will protect us from the lower realms and will lead us to liberation and enlightenment by showing us the path. So, and then, of course, there in the Lan Rim Chenmo lists many benefits for taking refuge. In the personal instructions, you know, you become you're included among Buddhists. You become worthy to obtain all vows. So, on the basis of refuge, you can take other vows, bodhisattva vows, tantric vows, so forth. You reduce and eliminate previously accumulated karmic obstructions. You accumulate vast merit. You will not fall into the miserable realms. You are, you will not be thwarted by human and non-human hindrances. You will accumulate vast merit. You will accomplish everything you wish. You will quickly achieve Buddhahood. So those are the benefits of taking refuge. So the numberless Buddhists, there are numberless Buddhas and Bodhisattvas that exist now. It's just not Shakyamuni Buddha or Buddha Vajrasattva for purification practice. They're numberless. In this world system, they're in other world systems. They in the sutras, they say that there are as many Buddhas and Bodhisattvas as there are grains of sand at the Ganges River, or the Ganges, which could be actually, I understand, is more like the Pacific Ocean, not just a river. So they have, by definition or by essence, they have great compassion, ultimate compassion for all beings without exception, without discrimination. So even though we don't see them, the omniscient mind of the Buddha pervades all things. There is no phenomenon, no place where the Buddha does not exist, for the Buddha is not there. So when you think of the Buddha, you call for the Buddha is there. So they promise to guide us, you know, they are there for our benefit. They benefit everyone. So if they benefit, you know, animals, insects, and so forth, they benefit for people or beings who cannot take the teachings, cannot understand the teachings, they appear as rays of light. For us who practice and try to study the Dharma. So, of course, they're here with us, you know. Of course, they would benefit us if they benefit people and beings who, you know, have even less inclination toward the Dharma. So, Shakyamuni Buddha said, in degenerate times in the future, I will manifest in the forms of spiritual masters and abbots. In order to ripen the minds of sentient beings, I will also show birth, old age, sickness, and death. Don't worry that you will not meet me in degenerate times. At that time, I will manifest as the abbot or as the teacher. So I see we're running out of time. I'm sorry, I keep talking. So let me wrap this up really fast. Okay, so the next one is that, of course, we need, as I mentioned before, we need to rely upon a guru. We have to find a spiritual teacher. And the reason for that is because of our karma. Even though we can see these holy objects, we can't see the Buddha himself here. Any Buddha himself, at least in my situation, I can't see the Nirmanakaya Buddha, the Buddha, you know, that we manifests us, even though he's here. So we have to rely on the teacher to transmit these teachings that the Buddha has given us thousands of years ago, you know, 2,600 years ago. They say that if there's no guru, there's no end of existence, meaning no end of existence of samsaric life. It's like being on a boat with no oars. So, as Shakyamuni Buddha said, that they manifest in our gurus in order to do that. So this is just so different from most of the religions. In religions, you know, in other religions, you have to, you know, you think of the divine creator or whatever as something that you can't touch, that you can't reach personally. You know, you can't really connect with them. But here you can connect them, you know, in flesh and blood. You can talk to them. So it's just an amazing thing that that it teaches. Plus, well, you know, we're going someplace that where we don't know. We've never been before. So we need a guide. It's like that in our daily situation. If you want to go from, you know, here to New York and you don't know how to get there, you could, you know, and you don't have any means to get there, you might try to hitchhike, but that's sort of chancy. So, you know, you want to make some money, buy a car, get your directions, and then take your map and go. And so that's how we do. We rely on a qualified teacher. And what's even most hopeful of all is that all beings, without exception, have Tathagata essence. And that means essence to become a Buddha or Tathagata. So that's our destiny. You know, eventually, it will take some time, and maybe not for me, some of us, maybe many of you are already a Buddha, but, you know, we can always, have this knowledge. It's not a hope, it's a fact. You know, we will be enlightened. So, you know, the way to start, you know, practice, if you want to start now and you haven't got a practice, the first thing to do is to, you know, start with a positive motivation in the morning. And His Holiness has this wonderful motivation. He says, every day, think as you wake up, today I'm fortunate to be alive. I have a precious human life. I'm not going to waste it. I'm going to use all my energies to develop myself, to expand my heart out to others, to achieve enlightenment for the benefit of all beings. I'm going to have kind thoughts toward others. I'm not going to get angry or think badly about others. I'm going to benefit others as much as I can. So, you know, even if you don't have very much time, you can try to just wake up with this motivation and try to remember it throughout the day. Be aware of what you're doing, how you're doing, why you're doing it. And if you can, I was going to do a meditation on Shakyamuni Buddha, but what it is ultimately is to just, you know, sit and meditate, get into your position, and just imagine that Shakyamuni Buddha, after you, you know, saying, you say this, request, you know, that you're going to take this opportunity to take the essence of this human rebirth and try to benefit others. And then just imagine Shakyamuni Buddha hears this request, and he is very pleased, and he melts into your the crown of your head, into your heart, and then he stays there as a light in your heart. And then just think that you have the Shakyamuni Buddha there with you all your life. I don't know if I said that, Pabinko Dechen Yimpo, the one who wrote Liberation in the Palm of his Hand, said, his teacher said that on the crown of every being without exception is a complete Buddha. So, you know, you should think about that, about the Buddha on your crown and also the Buddha on other crowns also. And then when you think, when you see an ant or a mosquito or whatever, worm, you know, whatever, then just think of them not just as being that worm or that insect or whatever. Think of it as a transmigratory being. Think of it, well, you know, I may have been an ant too in a previous life, or a worm or a mosquito or whatever, but I, in my, you know, future, next lives, I accumulated merit and I became a human being. And so this being, this ant or this worm, this mosquito also is in that process. So it also has the potential to become a Buddha. And it's just, and then one day it's going to be a human. One day it's going to be a Buddha too. So it's not just this thing that's going to remain as an insect, you know, even when I squash it. It's not just that. It's a transmigrating being, a reincarnating being is what it is. Okay, so I'm sorry I kept going on and on. And there's, I don't think there's any time for questions. So what I'd like to do is Geshe-la, at the end of his teachings, chants some mantras. And he says it's to prevent untimely deaths, especially for, you know, for people who have suicidal thoughts. And also he does his mantras for success in mundane and supramundane activities in our lives, and also so that we become a first disciple of Maitreya, the next Buddha who will be coming, and so that we will receive teachings directly from Maitreya. So I'd like to say those mantras. If you'd just like to relax. Amitayus, principal guide for this world, destroyer of all untimely death, refuge for all who suffer without a protector, homage to Buddha, Amitayus. When seeing signs of untimely death, in that second may I see the protector, Amitayus, and by that conquering the Lord of Death's power, may I quickly attain the state of an immortal wisdom holder. Om Namo Bhagavate Aparimita Ayushnana Suvinitita Tataya Tatagatayarete Samasambuddhata Yateyata Om Punya Punya Mahapunya Aparimita Punya Aparimita Punya Jana Samarapatite Om Sara Samkara Parishuddha Dharmate Gagana Samangata Sobhava Vishuddha Mahayana Parivare Soha Om Amarani Vishvantiya Soha Om Amarani Jivantiya Soha Om Amarani Jivantiya Soha. Bhagavan, with equal compassion for all whose name merely heard, dispel the suffering of the lower realms, dispeller of disease and the three poisons, I prostrate to medicine Buddha, lapis light, tea atam dekansa dekansa ma dekansa dekansa. Rata samangati soha, te atam dekansa dekansa ma dekansa dekansa. Rata samangati soha, te atam dekansa dekansa ma dekansa dekansa. Rata samangati soha. Please may the pleasures you may ripen upon all sentient beings right now. May all my pure prayers succeed immediately. Namo Ratnatayaya, Namo Bhagavata Shakyamunaya Teata Aratatagataya Arati Samisambuddhaya Teatam Ajite Ajite Aparajite Ajitankaya Hara Hara Med Avalokite Karakara Mahasamaya Siddhi Barabara Mahabodhi Menabhija Maram Emakama Samaya Bodhi Bodhi Mahabodhi Soha Om Mohi Mohi Mahamohi Soha Mone Mone Mara Soha. Now, if you don't mind, I'd like to read the prayer list. Prayers for happy rebirth. All those killed by natural man-made disasters, especially the Sherpas killed on Mount Everest. All the Tibetans who have been killed or have taken their own lives in the struggle for religious freedom. Donna, Corey, Fanny Lewis, Will Manson, Rachel Cole Madison, Hansa Pandya, Stewart, Russell Thomas, Mariposa, the wonderful cat. Job search. Jim Kay, Roseanne Barona, James Zillig, Greg Weaver, Ashlyn Kloss, Pooja, Sarai, Lindsay Piatti, Sandy Rimbush. Prayers for health and well-being. Kyabje Lama Zopa Rinpoche, Venerable Margaret McAndrew, Venerable Cherky Lamo, Venerable Losan Tsering, all those harmed by natural and man-made disasters for the Tibetan people and for the Chinese authorities. May the non-violent path lead to full reconciliation and religious freedom. Russell Allen, Lisa Baranski, Jim Barnes, Roseanne Barona, Harvey Blom, Elizabeth Campanile, Anwar Congo, Dimitri Diamandopoulos, Rita Dodrill, Paul Dumlo, Paul Foyle and Nancy Osterhoff, Dee Freeman and her daughter Lily, Mildred Gooch, Francis Hayashi, Leslie and Joan Inman, Kenny Jackson Buddy, Helen Kasanoff, Shanti and Kurt Latimer, Danny Love and Family RM, family of Will Manson, Judy Martin, Sean McGarity and family, Tom McGinnity, Brian Miller, Dickie Lee Aldershaw, family of Hansa Pandya, Jay Pandya, Pierre Parento, Anna Papard, and her cousins throughout the Ukraine, Aunt Polly, Eileen Rubin and family, Dr. Albert Sants, Jeannie Shario, David Shank, Rosemary Seitz, Lobsam Topdan, Dion Washington, Pat Watts, Deborah Webb, Sandy Wimbish, Dorja and Kadra the Pigs. So if you turn to the first pink sheet in the white prayer book, let's read the dedication verses there. May all beings everywhere, plagued by sufferings of body and mind, obtain a notion of happiness and joy by virtue of my merits. May no living creature suffer, commit evil, or ever fall ill. May no one be afraid or belittled with the mind weighed down by depression. May the blind see forms and the deaf hear sounds. May those whose bodies are worn with toil be restored on finding repose. May the naked find clothing, the hungry find food. May the thirsty find water and delicious drinks. May the four find wealth, those weak with sorrow find joy. May the forlorn find hope, constant happiness and prosperity. May there be timely rains and bountiful harvests. May all medicines be effective and wholesome prayers bear fruit. May all who are sick and ill quickly be freed from their ailments. Whatever diseases there are in the world, may they never occur again. May the frightened cease to be afraid and those bound be freed. May the powerless find power and may people think of benefiting each other. For as long as space remains, for as long as sentient beings remain, until then may I too remain to dispel the miseries of the world. In the land encircled by snow mountains, you are the source of all happiness and good, all-powerful Chenrezig Tenzin Gyatso. Please remain until samsara ends. Savior of the snowland teachings and transmigratory beings, who extensively clarifies the path that unifies emptiness and compassion, to the lotus in the hand, Lord Tenzin Gyatso, I beseech, may all your holy wishes be fulfilled. The one who mastered his speech at a very young age, the one with great patience who received the name Awatai, the one with great precision who spread the teachings of Lama Tsongkhapa on bliss and void, Lama ornament of the yellow hat tradition, please remain until samsara ends. You uphold the subduer's moral way, who serve as the bountiful bearer of all, sustaining, preserving, and spreading Majjhima's victorious doctrine, who masterfully accomplished magnificent prayers honoring the three jewels, savior of myself and others, your disciples, please, please live long. Now let's say seven green Taurus mantras for Geshe-la and for all our teachers. Om tare tu tare tu re so ha. 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 Thank you very much. And I think it's already on your the little flyer, but the people are coming back from the retreat at 6 o'clock tonight, and so they could really use some help. I understand that they are having surviving on 3 to 5 hours of sleep each night, so they're exhausted. So hopefully they'll get here very safely, and then we can need some help unloading and getting our Gompa back to where it was before. Thank you very much. Thank you for coming.